This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 52 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Hey, David, we have a guest this episode, someone who's been in the news lately.
We do, and I'll be brutally honest, I consider him a very good friend. We have Parker Jokers, who is been in the news. I actually met him in 2012 as he was part of the 621st Contingency Response Wing at McGuire Air Force Base, and we bonded over that, and he's taken up UAVs and soon to retire. If you're going to leave the Air Force, he's diving into UAVs, and his hexacopter or multicopter was the one that I flew. So if you've seen the video of me learning to fly a drone, that's Parker in the back telling me not to break his toy. So, Parker, welcome to the UAV Digest.
Greetings and salutations, gentlemen. It's really good to be here. I appreciate your opportunity. Airwolf has never been the same since you had your hands on her. So we'll deal with that later. You'll get a bill in the mail.
Now you know the tone of how Parker handles the universe. So Max, I guess we should get some brief introductions on why he's been in the news.
Just so we can baseline everybody, the story runs loosely like this. We have a Democratic member of Congress from upstate New York, Sean Maloney, and he was married this past June. Well, a video of the wedding was produced by Propellerhead's Aerial Photography. Now, the FAA says shooting this video was illegal, and it's investigating. At the same time, Mr. Maloney is a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. That's the committee that oversees the FAA. Now, Mr. Maloney's Republican challenger, Nan Hayworth, says, and this is a quote, "It is a blatant conflict of interest to be sitting on a committee while being investigated by an agency it oversees." Well, as David mentions, we have with us this episode Parker Jokers, the owner of Propellerhead's Aerial Photography. So, Parker, this video that you produced, this was on YouTube, or at least it was for a bit. Is that right?
Yeah, I went out to, at the behest of a friend of mine who was the videographer for this event, and he was hired to do a wedding video. And he brought out some cinema cameras and a two-man crew with him and said, we had worked together on, if you go to my website, which is propheadsphoto.com, there's a demo reel at the very top. You see a picture of the inside of a church. And that church was his student film that we flew. So he was he's a graduate of School of Visual Arts in New York City, and it was his thesis film. And so he and I know each other pretty well, and we really enjoyed working with each other. So he brought me in for, you know, brought me in for the day to just do aerial, and I flew for the day with him, and we shot some amazing stuff. And I went home with my footage. I own my footage. I gave him the copy of it for his production, and I went home with my footage. And looking through it, I was incredibly proud of what we had shot. And so I pulled a song off the internet and put it together and clipped together some clips and made a B-roll, made a supercuts out of it, and threw it up on my YouTube channel. Didn't think anything of it. I sent it to put it on my website, put it on my Facebook page, and it just kind of sat there and slowly climbed up. I mean, I had 250 views. I was like, okay, great. It's doing pretty well. And then suddenly I went back and my page views had just gone through the roof. And I knew something was wrong. And so I just did a search for a couple things, did a search for my name, I did a search for my company, did a search for wedding. And then the wedding bounced. And I was like, uh-oh. A conservative blog had picked it up as an attack piece to show how out of touch the representative was with his most extravagant wedding video of all time.
Oh, wow.
And the congressman had spent all of this money on this incredibly lavish production to make it to have a drone fly over his wedding. And I'm sitting here freaking out because I have just gotten the congressman in trouble with my demo reel, because I'm pretty sure he didn't want the whole public to see, you know, his house. And, you know, the party was not that lavish. It was a wedding that they spent 22 years preparing for. It was an amazing, beautiful ceremony. Everyone was just in a wonderful mood. It was just a great day. I was very proud to be a part of it. And it just started getting a little nuts. I got calls from the New York Post, which is no one you ever want to talk to. So I said, no, thank you, no comment. And then I got a call from the New York Daily News, and I did a short interview with them, just gave them some background, told them I didn't really want to get involved with the congressman. They used the quotes that I gave in regards to how it wasn't illegal and how it was just, you know, look, this is a pretty gray area. I was still generating my narrative at that point. Still trying to figure out how I'm going to navigate this, because I don't really want to dime out the congressman, who is, you know, my good man, the client, who doesn't really need to be, you know, I don't like being him being raked over the coals by something that I've done.
Sure.
And so the New York Daily News came out with a story, and then things got really insane. In the next 24 hours, I was contacted by CNN, ABC News, NBC New York, the Associated Press, the Washington Post, the New York Times style section, Motherboard. That was all in 24 hours.
And here you are at the UAV Digest.
And here I am doing my first real interview with you guys. So,
Parker, let me just ask you a question. What kind of preparations did you make before flying this mission? Who did you talk to? What did you do to get ready for this?
Fascinating. The first time I was asked to go, I was told there is going to be some DVs there, including possibly Nancy Pelosi, and Capitol Security is going to be there, and possibly Bill Clinton, because apparently this representative, who I did not know was a representative at the time, I'll tell you that story, was the youngest staffer in the Clinton White House. And so possibly Bill Clinton was going to be there. And so the first thing I did when I heard that is I said, all right, I'm not flying without clearance. So my videographer went on a site survey a couple weeks before the wedding, and I had him explicitly gain permission. And he said that he coordinated with the security, and I was cleared. And when I got there, they knew I was coming, and they said there was no problems whatsoever, and that I was cleared. So the first thing I did is I got permission from the people who owned the property, and then I got permission from the people who were guarding the property. I did not want the Secret Service turning on their music and jamming me and bringing me down in a ball of frustration, because it'll come down like someone pulling the plug on someone in the Matrix. They just fall. I really didn't want to have to deal with that. When I got there, I did a quick test flight to calibrate my compass and make sure I wasn't going to have any problems after the travel. And this gentleman walks up and shakes my hand and says, you know, I've been looking forward to this all week. I've been talking to my people, talking to my coworkers about this all week. I'm really excited to have you here. And I said, nice to meet you, sir. There are no laws that are against this, and we will be very safe, and we will have absolutely no issues today. We're waiting on the FAA to provide codified guidance for this. And he says, oh, that's good. I'm on the Aviation Subcommittee in Congress. And I looked at the guy who brought me out to the job, and I grabbed him by the ear, and I said, please come with me. And we walked around the corner, and I started to hit him. He did not tell me that this man was a congressman. We had a good laugh about that. But he goes, I'm sure I told you. And, you know, I think I would have remembered that. I think I would have introduced myself a little differently if I knew that. So I got the distinct impression that we were allowed there and we were welcome there and that we were okay to fly. And so we proceeded direct with that all day and had absolutely no issues. And we were welcome, and we were welcome to fly anywhere we felt we needed to fly. We flew outside the church, and we flew around his home, and we flew over his reception, and we flew actually – after the reception was over, they brought everyone out onto the lawn for some pyro, and they did a fireworks show. We had worked with the pyro guys beforehand to find out exactly where the fireworks were, the radius was, because they had worked very closely to determine their safe radius. And so we actually had a mark set while the sun was still up, so I knew if I was between these two trees, I would be on the edge of the show. And we lifted off at a certain mark in the show where the guy told us that we'd be getting the finale. And we lifted off, and we actually shot the fireworks from right at the edge of the fireworks, above the fireworks. So we had an amazing day. and we did not anticipate. I gave away like 50 business cards. I mean, everyone, this was the head of the party. Everyone was coming up and looking at the thing and talking to me about it, and they were geeked about it. They thought it was really cool, which it is. I like to think of myself as an ambassador for this career. I like to think of myself as someone who, every time I go out and I fly a safe, successful flight, and I'm respectful to the people I work with, that every one of them that watches that then learns what can be done.
We should probably make it clear that you're not just some fresh kid with his brand new DJI Phantom out to see what he can do. You have some experience with these things.
Yeah, this is a custom-built 14-pound UAP V2 hexacopter that's been through about a year and a half of testing and development. It carries a three-axis gimbal on it that we were carrying a Sony NEX-5. We now own an A6000 camera that does full HD, 1080 HD. I've been flying RC for about 8 years now, and I've been flying multicopters for about two of them. I build my own vehicles. I also consult and I teach. I'm also in the Air Force. I'm the Chief of Media Relations for the Contingency Response Wing. So if you're going to ask me about this, be prepared for me to teach and talk. So when the media came calling, I've had the distinct impression that I was their Huckleberry. I was the one that was going to be the one that was answering the questions. So I stood up for it. I did not back down. I did not say, yeah, you got me. This is illegal. Or you caught me caught. I said, no, there's nothing we've done that's illegal. If there were clear rules for this, we would not be in this conversation right now. We're the only career field that is actively begging for government intervention.
Yeah, for sure. Would you have thought differently if the whole trappy thing had gone a different way on the appeal?
Yeah, I would have. I don't like to use that as an excuse for me going out and quote unquote breaking the law, because I'm very firm on the opinion that there is none. You can't break a law that doesn't exist. And there's a difference between a guideline and a rule. And I know rules are binding and guidelines are not. This is the world that the FAA would like to see. And the FAA's mandate is to create the safest airspace system in the world, and they have done a very good job of that. And to do that, they will say no 1,000 times before they say yes once. It's easier for them to say no. And so they've said no to us. And unfortunately, there's a community of businessmen out there that is not waiting. I find it amusing that the cinema industry in California even bothered to apply for a waiver. They've been doing it for years, and they're going to keep doing it. I don't know of a single aerial photographer that has stopped flying.
Parker, well, what do you say to people who are filming real estate like you have done, but they say, well, we're not really charging to fly the hexacopter. We're charging them the development of the film. I mean, you've always taken the position that, yes, this is a business, and part of the business is I fly a hexacopter and I'm really good at it.
I think it's a silly lie that everyone can see through. Come on. If you're flying for a realtor, that's a business. You're flying commercial. And I don't think that's the argument. I think the argument is that if you are a hobbyist, you can do it all day and there's no problems whatsoever and there's no guidelines or rules on you whatsoever. And the first line of that 1981 circular is compliance with this is voluntary. So I have no problems with them saying you are not allowed by law to fly over 400 feet. Okay, that's a law. That's a rule. We suggest that you don't fly over 400 feet. Now, there are some FPV pilots out there that would like to be able to fly higher and take that voluntary guidance as just that, voluntary. But don't say that if you're just, oh, we're just trading goods for services. This isn't actually money being changed hands. It's a business, but don't hide from that. I mean, technically what you're doing is not illegal. The same safety guidelines apply. But it doesn't make you more unsafe because you've been paid for it. I would argue that I am much safer than your average hobbyist, because if I have a crash and I lose my $5,000 hexacopter, I'm out of business. I am obsessive about safety. If the FAA grounds me because I was unsafe, I lose my business.
Well, so
I'm extraordinarily careful.
And I will attest to that. I was A, terrified when I flew Airwolf, and B, comforted that I knew that you would not let me go to places where I shouldn't go. And you are an educator first. And
my hands were always near your controls. I was ready to snatch them out of your hands. And we had gone over, more importantly, tell people about the briefing you got before we even took off.
My 2-minute flight was probably close to an hour where we talked about what was involved, what it was. I mean, I was a complete zero novice. I mean, and talking about how the aircraft flies, what it's seeing, what it's thinking, you know, what you do. What we had was an audience of kids. You know, we secured the perimeter, all of the technology that was involved to make sure that my 2-minute flight was flawless. There was a lot of work behind it. And what do you say then, Parker, to all those people who are going out with their DJI Phantoms and flying over the George Washington Bridge and accidentally flying in airspace of helicopters? How do we get this industry to take a tract of education first, safety first?
I think that every pilot, regardless of what they fly, needs to be very, very aware of the ramifications of their actions and should be prepared to deal with the consequences. If they fly somewhere that feels unsafe, it's probably unsafe. If you're flying somewhere adjacent to a news helicopter, you are most likely not allowed there. I brief when I teach, never make a crash scene out of another crash scene. And never fly anywhere that's going to get you put on Fox News or Nancy Grace. So clearly, I don't listen to my own advice because now I'm on the news.
Yeah.
But at the same time, where we flew was not dangerous. Where we flew was very thought out and was very – we ground walk every flight before we lift off. I don't care if we've been there 7 hours. For every flight, we're going to ground walk every step of that, and we're going to talk through every step. Everyone who's around me knows exactly what the bail and abort plan is. If we have a problem, we know exactly where we're going to push to put the vehicle down, and I will tell people in a heartbeat, it's going to go into those trees because there's no people there. It's going to go into that lake because there's a crowd on the shore. It's going to go into this field because it's behind us and there's no one there. I mean, I will put my vehicle into a smoking pile before I hurt anybody with it. I think every pilot needs to have that mentality of, I have people there. This is a thing. It can be replaced.
So in order to get that, though, we need those pilots to have awareness. You mentioned that. They need to have training. And so doesn't that imply that in the end, part of the FAA's regulations, when we get them, should involve certificating pilots?
I think that I know that there's an AMA aspect to this where they would like to step in and provide some sort of guidance to the hobbyist community. They're trying to protect us from the FAA. By mandating that, you know, by saying, hey, look, we will help educate the hobbyist public if you guys don't molest them. I think that there is a role for a group of experts or a group of experienced pilots that can help shepherd the new guys through the ranks. I learned from a pilot that was already a pilot. He was an Air Force air crewman, and then he got his pilot's license, and he had been flying RC since he was a kid. I learned on a buddy box from a pilot that would go, all right, dead stick, and he'd come reach over and shot my throttles. He would teach me what to do in an emergency, and he would teach me to plan ahead, and he would teach me to never take off until you've done your pre-flight. And I learned from a mentor. And so I would recommend that everyone who wants to learn how to fly or wants to go out and fly every afternoon in the park, take a buddy out there with them. And no one is as smart as two people are. No one is as smart as, you know, you're always going to learn something from someone else. You should always involve yourself in the community as much as possible. There's a lot of answers to questions that sometimes we flub our way through and we just don't know. Now I'm talking, I know you guys talk about the 55 pound and up. You're talking about the Boeing and the Raytheon and the Scan Eagle and the Global Hawk side of the picture. I'm talking about the park flyer guys that buy their first Phantom and go, this is amazing. Watch me put a camera on this. And suddenly it changes the way people see their world and they want more. They want to lift a bigger camera, and then they want to start. Then they realize that to pay for this hobby, they're going to want to charge people for it. Trust me, this is how it started with me. My wife looked at me one point and went, "You're going to pay all this back, right?" I mean,
you spent a lot of money on this, aren't you?
Yeah. Did you realize that your PayPal bill last year was $10,000? I'm like, no, no, it didn't. That's lies. Those numbers are lies. No, she didn't lie. She was right. She showed me the total for the entire year, and I had spent on vehicles and support equipment and all that stuff, 10 grand. And I didn't feel like that over the course of a year, but this is a business. You know, I have insurance. I have an accountant. I have I hope I don't need a lawyer, but I've got one picked out. You know, I've got a messaging plan, and I've got a press packet, and I've got a website, and I've got, you know, this is everything that makes me look like a professional. I better act like one. When I show up on a job with my logo on my shirt, I had better represent my company. So safety is top five.
So do you feel like as a result of all this, you're in trouble?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
So you're a little apprehensive about what might happen next, I imagine.
I am looking at jobs in a whole new way. I'm thinking that everything I do now is going to get microscoped by the FAA. Everything that I do that gets put public now, every job that I post about is going to be inspected. The first thing they're going to do is they're going to find out if it's within 5 miles of a hospital helipad. And then they're going to go, oh, there you go. And I won't know until I get the letter. Now, that's no way to run a regulatory agency. Here I go. There, I just said it. You know, that's no way to teach me how to do this properly. It's just to wait till I do something wrong and then come down on me.
Has the FAA communicated with you?
I have not received a single word from the FAA at this point, and it's been a week. So either they are building their case or they have decided that I am not worth their trouble. I stated to the Washington Post that they're going to squish me like a bug. My plan is to grow spikes in a nasty state before they step on me.
I guess, Parker, my question is, what do you think they would want to do? I mean, you're not alone. And we had the Texas result come out late last week where they can now fly UAVs for search and rescue. And the no-fly proclamation from the FAA was overruled by court. Do you think that they're going to start making examples of other people?
I think making an example is the wrong word. I believe firmly that the FAA has the best interests of us at heart. They have got to maintain the safety of our airspace system. They are terrified that some dude with a DJI Phantom is going to plunk one of these things through the windshield of a 737 on final over LaGuardia. Because right now there's nothing that keeps somebody who lives in Jersey City from lifting off and putting it right into the flight path at Newark Airport. There's nothing that prevents some guy with an FPV wing flying at 4,000 feet, 7 miles from home, from putting his Pelican through the windshield of a news helicopter. There's nothing that prevents a lot of us from doing a lot of damage. That said, banning us is not the answer. In the meantime, until they come up with guidance and rules, I'm afraid of two things. One, they're going to just try and mandate that all the dangerous things in their mind, out of line of sight flying, FPV stuff, is just too dangerous and they can't tolerate the risk. The second thing is that they're going to finally say, okay, there's a way for you to do it. It's this 97-step process that's going to take 32 days for a flight clearance. And then everyone's going to be like, oh, I can't do that. Well, then you're not legal. Now it's illegal, and now we're going to prosecute you. And they're just going to drill down on that until no one can do it, except for unless you've got a staff of 10 that are just going to do your paperwork for you. I can't afford that. I'm one guy with a multi-copter in the trunk of a station wagon who drives around to jobs and just flies as safely as he can. Is that going to last? No. Am I going to need to eventually file flight plans? I think so. That's the way they do it in Canada. Transport Canada has a 20-day process to file for a single flight. Now, I had 5 flights a couple days ago. That means I've got to do 4-5 of those processes. That scares me. That worries me. But is that the only way that they're going to be able to maintain to make sure that the people that are flying understand that the places that they're flying are, you know, okay, if you've done your homework, then you can verify to us in your process that you know exactly where all the risks are. You've contacted all the people, you've coordinated with them. That's when you're going to fly. You know where your risk, you know where the helipads are and the airports are, and you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think that kind of neuters the whole concept. I mean, part of the value that these things can bring is in responsiveness and being able to deploy quickly and effectively in situations, especially in emergency situations, accidents, search and rescue. I mean, all of those kinds of things where you need a fast response.
You've got a mudslide and you want to go find rescue. You want to rescue survivors and you want to find them and you need to put yourself up over that mudslide in 20 minutes. Is it going to be the kind of thing where you just go, screw it, I'll do it without the waiver? I would. The thing is, I'm a board member of the Professional Society of Drone Journalists, and I think a lot about the uses of multicopters for journalism, and we advocate the safe and prudent and responsible ethical use of multicopter technology for journalism. And to be honest with you, right now, if there was a five alarm fire in a large building in a safe area for me, would I put the multicopter up? No. I don't think at that time, in that environment, it is the time to convince the number of people you need to convince that it's okay that you're there. You can expect to get arrested if you fly over a large scene like that. Like the guy who flew over the gas explosion in Brooklyn or Harlem. Like, you know, that's a perfect example. It's a newsworthy event. It can be covered very well by a multicopter. But is it the place that you want to explain to people in stress, in duress, trying to gain control of a scene, that your multicopter is not just an additional stressor to them? We need to change the way we think about this technology as a news gathering tool. On the scene of a crisis is not the time. But that said, I think, you know, the example of the guy that found the missing elderly gentleman just a couple days ago. Perfect example. He's the first guy who's actually saved a life with a multicopter that I'm aware of. And go for it. I almost hope he gets a cease and desist letter from the FAA. I hope that he's the next one we get to prove is the right person to fight this fight. Now, if they come after me, I'm going to fight. I'm not going down without a fight. I will not go quietly into the night. I believe strongly in the fact that I am doing what I am doing as safely as possible. Now, if they come after me later and say, when they've come out with rules, like you have to, the whole concept of safely integrating us into the airspace system isn't just finding a way to allow us to do what we're already doing. I understand this, you know, and the FAA isn't happy until you're unhappy. That's the way they roll. But I absolutely hope that it's some sort of – there's a digital integration as well. I hope that my vehicle will squawk a TCAS signal or have an IFF transponder on it so that they know where I am without me having to go through a 20-day process to tell some pilot who may be 10 miles away and 10,000 feet above me that below me at that point is – you know, a TCAS signal is a perfect example of what I could broadcast right now on my vehicle.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
So if I pop up into somebody's airflow, they know where I am and they can avoid me. So it isn't like dot, 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 what the hell is that bang? Or we, you know, they avoid it at the last second. It's too late at that point. A DJI Phantom, you can't spot from 100 feet away. You think you're going to spot it from 2 miles? Moving at 500 miles an hour? You're going to thwack that thing and not even know what you hit. You're going to think it's a seagull. A seagull made of LiPo.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, I don't blame the FAA for staring awake at the ceiling every night going, when are we going to have that accident? And we all know about that, what that accident is. That accident is the first time someone stuffs an aircraft down an intake.
Yeah, and nobody wants to see that.
And no, and then it's all over.
Yeah, yeah, that changes everything. That would change everything. And we don't want to get to that point, certainly, that we have to learn that that would change everything.
I had a small vendor tell me, he was calling me to ask what DJI parts he should buy, and I told him I'd help him make a list for money, and he never called me back. But yeah, he wanted me to do his job for him. But he said that his competitor was selling 700 DJI Phantoms a month.
Good grief.
And that's a small order. Now, a DJI distributor must maintain a $40,000 monthly order. So everyone who's selling DJI stuff, all the hundreds of people out there, are selling at least $40,000 worth of DJI equipment a month. That's a lot of Phantoms.
Yeah, it sure is.
How many people do you know own Phantoms now? I know 10.
Yeah, they're all over. They're easy to obtain, and they're relatively easy to fly, at least to fly without crashing them deliberately.
I used to call them the Phantom Menace, and then I actually got a chance to fly one for a duration, and I think they are the gateway drug to awesome right now. I really do.
That's a great way to put it.
I mean, you are getting just enough of an experience base where you can gain confidence to fly something a lot more complicated. But to be completely honest with you, on my commercial multicopter, I'm flying a NASA. I'm flying the same control board because it works. I don't have to worry about flying it. I control it. I tell it to go up. I tell it to stay. Then I look down and I take my pictures. Hmm. You know, I fly a manual board. I fly a KK2 and I fly a NAZI and I fly all kinds of, you know, manual stuff too. But when I work, I don't want to be worrying about flying. I want to worry about framing my shot. Now, I know I've had been contacted, and since my name got in the news, I've been contacted by about 5 people who have come to me and said, I'm flying a Phantom right now, but I want to get bigger. More power to them. I think there's room for everybody, and if you're doing good work, you'll rise to the top. So I'm not threatened by people who want to do what I want to do, because hopefully I'll syndicate, and then they'll buy a license from me. Who knows? But the fact is that a Phantom, that's a software solution. SafeFlight is the software solution for that problem we've got. There's, if 90% of the people out there are flying Phantoms, and I think it's a high number, you know, you can fix the problem with them flying where they're not supposed to fly by putting a software lock in the software, which is what they've done with SafeFlight.
Mm, yes.
Genius. And so as long as they're updating the firmware, we have the ability to keep people out of areas the FAA doesn't want. Now, does that mean that I may end up having to put that on my vehicle? If that's what it needs to, for them to not molest me every time I want to fly, where they come to me and they say, you are being unsafe, I'm like, how could I be unsafe? I'm not allowed to even arm in that area.
All right. Well, Parker, I think that'll be the last word. We've kind of run out of time, but I want to give you another opportunity again to tell our listeners where they can find out more about propeller heads and you personally.
My website is propheadsphoto.com, and you can use the contact us link to contact us for information on building vehicles for you, for teaching you how to fly, and for flying or driving to your location and doing videos, photos, and any other consulting or multi-copter services for you. We'd like to think of ourselves as a full service multi-copter education and building service, and we would love to help you grow in this hobby and help you grow in this career. And I'd like to think of myself as a mentor. So give me a call if you have any questions.
Great. Thank you so much, Parker.
My pleasure.
We want to thank everyone for listening. This has been episode 52 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, which we haven't started yet, but you can still sign up for it. Also, you can find show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/52. David, tell our listeners where else they can find us.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest. Our very active Twitter feed, which is at uavdigest.com. And of course, you can go to iTunes and leave us a review. Or if you listen on Stitcher, leave us a review. And Max, should we make an announcement that we have another website for people to look at?
Well, yes, we have had some requests from people wondering how they could help support us. And so we have a link on our website that will take you to where you can make donations if you'd like to do that. And just check that out at theuavdigest.com.
So I guess with that, I'm going to go back to enjoying my vacation at the beach. I'd like to thank our guest, Parker Jokers, of Propeller Heads. Parker, it's always a blast to have you around. So I guess with that, this is David in Ocean City.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.